Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Charava Lava Giribhada Dhani Jaya Gopi Jana Lava Giri Bharat Hari 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 Yamuna Kira Vanachari Kira Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giribhara Dhari Shadhanandana Rajajana Ramjana Yamuna Kira Vanachari Yamuna Kira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Kunja Madhava Kunja Vihari Shnapad Paramahamsa Puribhagat Acharya Astatera Sri Srimad Savangam Prabhai Charanaravinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Sri Rupa Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vinda Sri Rupa Iskand Deviti Founder Acharya Sri Rupa Ki Jai Nama Acharya Sri Harinas Thakur Ki Jai Namsikaho Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityanam Nishya Devi Jai Shri Radha Krishna Gopakopina Shamukun Radha Kun Giri Gopidam Jai Shri Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Shamaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Kai Gopinana Glories to the Assembly All glories to the Assembly All glories to the Assembly Glories to Sri Guru at the Lord. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Vivisesa sunyavadi tujjati dasakavine. We're going to read from chapter 18, beginning with text 62. And we're going to look at these texts from Krishna's perspective of by understanding Krishna's nature or the mood and the intention behind what he's speaking. Because if you want to understand what someone's saying, you need to understand the person, because we make assumptions, we misunderstand. And sometimes we do that with Krishna also. So we will try to delve more deeply into understanding more about Krishna's, not his mind, but more of his heart. His mind as well, but his heart. So the only challenge is whether or not he can be able to read it. But the light here isn't so good. And do we don't have light like on our phone, I think? Yeah. Or reading glasses. Either would work. Those are reading glasses? Yeah, perfect. Thank you. I could use. All right, we'll do the cleaning ceremony. So, the last verses of the Gita talk about surrender. At the same time, Krishna describes that you don't have to surrender. And we're going to try to understand why he's saying that, when he's saying this is what should be done. So text 62. O Sayana Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. Can you know how to chant? I can't speak well. This is on an angle. Okay, so the easiest thing to do is just turn it up. Do you know how to do that?
Yeah, I think so.
Or Prango Vidin or something. Thank you, Prabhu. Wow. Is there a science to wearing these? It's worse. Are these prescription?
No,
they look like prescription. Let me try it again. I don't know. I don't know the science of keeping these on. So I'll try it. O Sayana Bharata, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme and eternal abode. So now Krishna says, the next verse seems to be the opposite. Text 63, thus I have explained to you knowledge still more confidential, which is surrender is the most confidential. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. So now it sounds like Krishna doesn't care. This is what you should do, but do what you want. It seems like he doesn't really care that much, which is not true. So why is Krishna saying, do what you want? He's not saying it because he wants Arjuna to do what he wants. He's saying it to state of fact that you will make a decision and I won't interfere with it. So now that you've heard from me, it's up to you to decide what you want to do. And that's Krishna's official position. So just because Krishna says, do what you want to do, doesn't mean that's what he wants Arjuna to do. And a lot of times, Krishna says many things, not many things, but sometimes Krishna says things he doesn't want us to do. But he's just stating a tattva. So here is a tattva, or stating a tattva, that you as jiva have some independence, being part and parcel of Krishna, who is Swarat, who has all independence. But you have some independence also, which means you can surrender or not. It's totally up to us. So Krishna is stating a tattva, not a desire. He's saying, here's the tattva. I've instructed you. You can do whatever you want. It's not what I want you to do. And how do we know it's not what Krishna wants? Because if you read the next verse, you'll find out. So this verse, I don't know, this verse is sometimes overlooked. The significance of this verse is overlooked. But it really reveals what's going on inside of Krishna's heart. So let's remember the verse we just read. Deliberate on this fully and decide what you want to do. Or as Prabhupada says, do what you wish to do. Huh. There's a story. Before I read the next verse, I have to build up to the next verse. Two disciples of Prabhupada were questioning Prabhupada about whether or not they had to follow their authorities, in this case it was the GBC, those who govern ISKCON in that area of the world. They didn't want to follow them, they didn't trust them. They didn't think they had gave good instructions. So they said, Srila Prabhupada, we want to follow you, but we don't want to follow the GBC. And Prabhupada said, well, if you want to follow me, my order to you is to follow the GBC. They said, no, Prabhupada, we don't trust them, we'll follow you, but we won't follow, we don't want to follow the GBC. So this conversation kept going back and forth, back and forth. And they didn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. He was saying, obviously, you want to follow me? Okay, fine. So this is my order to you. This is what I want you to do, follow the GBC. No, we won't. Going back and forth like that. So then Prabhupada saw this was going nowhere, that he had two quote-unquote disciples who were arguing with him over what he wanted them to do, and they were refusing. And they asked some other questions, for which they weren't satisfied with Prabhupada's answers. So the conclusion was, Prabhupada said, then do whatever you want. So when your spiritual master says do whatever you want, in this context, he means you're no longer my disciple, because you want to do what you want, you're not my disciple. I'm meant to instruct you. So that was Prabhupada's way of rejecting them, without saying it directly. You're not my disciples, you don't follow what I teach. So since you're not my disciples, then why are you asking me anything? And you don't want to follow the GBC, etc. Okay, fine, just do what you want to do. So that's not what Krishna is doing here with Arjuna, although it could seem that way. He's not doing that at all. He's stating a tattva. It's the tattva of the jiva, the truth of the jivas. They have independence, and they can do whatever they want. I won't force you. And even Prabhupada said many times to his leaders, you can't force, because it's voluntary. People have to serve Krishna voluntarily. We can't force them. Even Prabhupada can't force them. Even Krishna can't force them. Matirana Krishna Padakasa Toba Bhagavatam says, even God can't get you to do something you don't want to do. So it seems like Krishna is saying, whatever, I gave you my instructions, so you know, whatever. Just do whatever you want. So we see in text 64, that's not the case at all. That's not what's in Krishna's heart. So it seems like now Krishna has just let everything go. It's out of his control. And Bhagavad Gita is over now. Right? This is only verse 63, so it's not over. But it seems like it's over. Right? Okay, so I've given you my instructions. Think about it. Do what you want to do. Bhagavad Gita finished. Verse 63, over. That's what it seems like. But Krishna, now you'll see Krishna's mood. He can't leave it hanging like that. So what does he say? Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. So he didn't stop speaking. What is he saying here? Indirectly, he's saying, I want you to do what I said because it's going to be the best thing for you. So even though he said, do what you want to do, now he's continuing to teach Arjuna not to do what he wants to do if what he wants to do is not what Krishna told him to do in the last 18 chapters. And then man mana baba mad bhakta, always think of me, become my devotee, like that. So going back to verse 64, Krishna is saying here, you could rephrase this. Krishna is saying, because you're very dear to me. You could rephrase it by saying, because I love you, because you're in my heart, because you're the dearmost. And don't forget, Arjuna is representing everyone. So when Krishna says, you're dear to me, that means we're all dear to Krishna. Krishna wants us all back. So what Krishna is saying is, I can't just let you go because you're too dear to me. So I have to say more to convince you to surrender. And then the famous verse comes, 66, Sarvadhamam Pratyaja. Just surrender unto me. And the word for surrender is Sharanam. Sharanam means to take shelter. But at shelter means so many things. But in my analysis of this verse and studying this and thinking about it, reflecting on it, and seeing this sequence of verses, we can see that Krishna, he's exhibiting this mood of, I've come to this planet to save you because I love you. So when Krishna says surrender or take shelter, he's saying, I'm offering you my love, accept it. We look at it, the word surrender, as, and then we think, oh, surrender. This is difficult, or this is not pretty, or this is scary. It's not the way Krishna is meaning it. Krishna is meaning it, you're dear to me. I'm dear to you. I've come here for you. I want you to go back. I'm offering you my love. Please accept it. So when Krishna says, surrender unto me, he's really saying, please accept my love, and please to have a relationship. I am here, I love you, please reciprocate with that love. That's what Krishna is asking. Now, a lot of times devotees say, but Krishna loves me? Like, why? I didn't do anything to deserve it. Is there evidence? These verses are evidence, and the general evidence is that Krishna came here, he did his lila, and he spoke Bhagavad Gita. If he didn't love us, if he didn't care, why would he make that offer? So, I like to think of the Bhagavad Gita as two things, an invitation back to Godhead and a GPS how to get there. And it's nice to think of it that way, because when you offer someone a Bhagavad Gita and they say, I'm not interested, it really makes sense. is they're saying, I'm not interested in going back to Godhead, and I don't care how to get there. Which is, unconsciously, it's what they mean. They don't consciously know that. But Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's invitation, and it's in this verse, 1866. I love you because you're dear to me. I spoke this. You're in my heart. I want you. I'm waiting for you. Will you surrender, meaning will you reciprocate with that love? That's all it means. So we don't have to be afraid of this word surrender. Think of surrender as reciprocation of Krishna's love. And Krishna's saying, 1866, give up all dharma and surrender. What does that mean? Krishna's, he's given so many ways to progressively, systematically make advancement. And now, in the end of the Gita, he's saying, you know, that's not really what I wanted. That's just if you're not ready to engage in a relationship of love. Then you can do all these other things incrementally. Do your dharma. Give up the fruits of work. Do this, do that. But that's not what I want. The essence is to love. And then someone might say, why did he waste 45 minutes speaking the Gita if this is what he wanted? Well, Arjuna wasn't ready. Neither were we, were we ready. But at the same time, when we read Prabhupada's Gita, he didn't waste 18 chapters to talk about surrender. He talked about it right away, in the beginning, at least by the second chapter. So, Krishna is saying, this is what I want. I want love. If you have love, you don't need the other 18 chapters. They're of no use. It's all that, all those other instructions are just to bring you to this point of love. And if you have that, that's everything. That's what I want. Now, we skip over to Nectar of Devotion. Anyabhilashita Shunya. This is the Paribhasa Sutra. This is the main verse of Nectar of Devotion. This is the whole Nectar of Devotion is based on this verse. And this is the theme. Really, you could say, this is Srila Prabhupada's contribution. This is the contribution of Gaudiya Vaishnavism amongst all religions. Even Mahaprabhu argued with the Sri Sampradaya. Your philosophy is not pure. You're still wanting something from God. If we study Prabhupada's books, if we study his teachings, if we boil it down and we're asked, what is the essence that Prabhupada is giving, then we come to this conclusion. Serve God without any motive. That's it. Prabhupada once said, this is quite amazing, and you can take it as you want and apply it as you want. I won't comment on it, but I just want to tell you, it's so amazing. He said, a pure devotee, even if he's starving, he won't ask Krishna for food. Wow, amazing. He doesn't want to ask Krishna because it would spoil the rasa of pure love to even ask for food. And then we have the example of Gajendra. He actually didn't ask. After a year, he didn't really know what to do. So he asked Krishna for help, but he didn't specifically ask for anything. Like, he just said, I don't know what to do, Krishna. You're the only one I can depend on. So in the realm of pure bhakti, the devotee is extremely reluctant to ask Krishna for anything other than pure bhakti and pure service. So this is the essence. If we study Prabhupada's books, if we study his letters, his morning walks, his conversations, his theme keeps coming up and up as the target. And so 1866 is actually, that's what it is. It's Krishna asking for pure love. And so the way I like to look at it, or one time, our godbrother, Charu Prabhu, he once said something that struck me. He said, You have a relationship with God. We all have a relationship with God. But if we don't have a relationship now, then whose fault is it? Who moved? Who left? Who moved out of the way? It wasn't Krishna. So the way we see this, the way we can see it, or I should say we should see it, is that Krishna is giving pure love. Krishna is ready to reciprocate with whatever love we can muster up and give him. And so the relationship from his side is perfect, and the relationship from our side is wanting, and Krishna is saying, I love you purely, and I want a pure relationship. Why don't you just do that? I'm waiting for that. This is what I want, and then you'll be happy. Now, the perennial question, and I don't want to get into it because there's too much controversy surrounding it, but I want to point to a specific area of this question. The perennial question is, how did we come here? Why would we turn our back on Krishna? And the best answer, without going into where we came and how we fell and the whole psychology, but I think the best answer is to the question, how can we turn our back on Krishna? Have you turned your back on Krishna recently? How many times today did you look away from Krishna towards sense gratification? How many times this week? How many times this year? So why would we ask the question, how could we turn our back on Krishna when we do it all the time? Oh, that looks good. Oops, ooh, I forgot to offer it. You ever do that? Namo Dasatarane Hare Krishna. Whoop. You know. So we're attracted to things that don't give Krishna pleasure, and we quote unquote sometimes enjoy them. That's turning our back on Krishna. We forget Krishna. Anytime we turn towards thoughts of this will make me happy, we've actually turned our back on Krishna. Of course, we can engage those things in Krishna's service, so we can turn around and think, but I like this, but I can engage it in Krishna's service. But for the sake of this discussion, anytime we think, I would like this, this would make me happy, this would please my senses, we've turned our back on Krishna. And so it's not difficult to understand that that's the conditioning of all of us. And therefore, the opposite of that conditioning, what is it? It's love. It can't be anything but it's love or sense gratification. That's what it is. Those are the two ends of it. And you work your way up to it in between. And when you have complete control of your senses, and your mind is absorbed in thinking and serving, without motive or anything other than Krishna's pleasure, then we have arrived. That's what it's all about. That's where Prabhupada is taking us. Now, someone may say, but I'm not that advanced. And so Rupa Goswami says, well, the good news, Rupa Goswami says, well, it's not necessarily a question of being advanced. It's a question of why you're doing it. What's the point of doing it? If I can do it with the desire that my guru will be pleased, Prabhupada will be pleased, Krishna will be pleased, that's the definition of anyabhilashita, without material motive. So, at least theoretically, at any stage of bhakti, one can do that. One can think, I will do this for Krishna's pleasure. Now, I was thinking the other day, I kind of had an interesting thought. I think it goes along with this. We have these stories we've heard of devotees who are very austere, renowned, knowledgeable. Not lots of stories, but occasionally I've heard stories of such devotees. Far, far more knowledgeable, far more renowned, detached, austere than most of us, maybe all of us. And sometimes Prabhupada would talk about them and say, they're doing these things because they enjoy doing them. And their spiritual masters sometimes would ask them to do something else, and they're actually attached to the austerity, and their spiritual master didn't want them to do that austerity. And they kept doing it. And I thought, that's interesting. So then the question comes, okay, so what is advancement? What does it mean to be advanced? Srila Prabhupada set the perfect example of what it means to be advanced. To not be attached to comfort or pleasure or attached to living in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, you do not understand the bliss that I was experiencing living in Vrindavan. But later on he said, I should have left Vrindavan. It was my big mistake that I lived there so long. I should have gone out. So he saw that as a kind of transcendental sense gratification, which was getting in the way of his service to his guru. Because one devotee wanted to live in Rishikesh, to remain brahmacharya, and Prabhupada said, please don't do that. I wasted so much time in Vrindavan. I should have gone out. Wow, I heard that. I said, wow, that is so interesting. Sacrificing one's own transcendental pleasure for the pleasure of guru. So sometimes we find people very advanced, learned, but there's something they're avoiding doing that their guru wants. Then, and there's somebody else who's not as austere, not as renounced, not as knowledgeable, but they're completely lined up with the desire of their guru. Who's more advanced? Interesting, isn't it? So now we have Prabhupada's example. And this is the example that is inspiring and motivating us and behind the success of ISKCON. That what may be relishable spiritually, what we may be attached to spiritually, sometimes has to be given up for the service of the order of the spiritual master, what he wants us to do. And that is actually a higher stage of Krishna consciousness. And Chaitanya Prabhu told me a story which illustrates this. I don't know if I ever told this story, but I love this story. So there was some devotees were meeting to discuss the devotion of the gopis. And these devotees were, you know, studying the gopis' love and trying to understand it and discussing it and so forth. So Chaitanya Prabhu said he was invited to this sangha to discuss. And he made a comment which I love. And he said, you want to know what the gopis' love is? He said, this is the gopis' love. When you're 70 years old and you risk your life to spread Krishna consciousness in America, that's the love of the gopis. I love that because I think that embodies everything I'm trying to say right now. And Prabhupada's example is everything to us. It is the essence of devotion to Guru. And from that devotion, Shastra says, all the insights to the Vedas come from devotion to Guru. The same bhakti you have to Krishna, you have to Guru. And then everything is manifest. So, spirituality, religion, and so forth is really about understanding the essence beyond the rules, the regulations. And it's so interesting because Krishna says sarva dharmam. You don't have to worry so much about rules and regulations. Worry about loving me and worry about doing whatever helps you love me. The last thing I want to say, then we can have some discussion and questions, is that it's interesting in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In the section where Prabhupada's talking about the potency and power of the Maha Mantra, he said, as Krishna said, sarva dharma parityaja mam ekam sharanam, surrender to me. Mahaprabhu said, Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. Chant Hare Krishna. He said, it's the same thing. there is no difference. So in Kali Yuga, the chanting of the holy name, 16 rounds following the principles, is the surrender. And we all know how much Prabhupada stressed this again and again and again. And even if you don't understand it, why 16? Why four principles? Why not three? Why not six? When Prabhupada was sometimes asked these questions, why this and why that, he would say, because this is what the acharyas taught us and we just follow it. That's what they said. You don't have to question it, you just have to do it. So that's the mood Prabhupada taught us. When Prabhupada was asking, why are we distributing books? They're logical answers to enlighten people. That's the logical answer. Right? Prabhupada said, no, we're distributing books to make our spiritual master smile, because we know Srila Bhakti Siddhanta will be pleased. So this is the deeper level of bhakti. And you know those stories where Sri Tirthakirti wanted to go on book distribution when he was Prabhupada's servant. Prabhupada said, yes, you can go, but without my blessing. And that one time he went to Mangalarti, and Prabhupada called him during Mangalarti and said, never go to Mangalarti. So you are meant to be with me and serve me. So that order, don't go on book, you like this order, don't go on book distribution, go to Mangalarti. Oh, I could do that, yeah. No, yeah, if you're with Prabhupada 24/7, then that's okay. But there's always going deeper. And it's all about love. And we know in the last days when the devotees didn't know if Prabhupada was going to stay or not, and Prabhupada at one point said, well, Krishna will let me choose. And everyone's thinking, oh, great, Krishna will let Prabhupada choose. So he's going to stay, and Prabhupada said, but I don't want to stay. Just driving the devotees completely crazy. But Prabhupada, we want you to stay. This body's finished. What can I do? Okay, I'll stay. And then, no, I don't want to stay. And they're really saying, Prabhupada, they didn't say you're driving us crazy, but more or less, that's what they were saying. We're going crazy here. We love you so much, this is driving us crazy. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is the duty of the guru, to extract that love, because that love is the essence. So I just always felt it important, when we study Krishna's words, we have to know his heart, what's going on, what ultimately does he want from us, what is he asking from us. And we know Krishna is the relisher of rasa. That's what he wants. He wants love and nothing else from us other than our heart and our love. And he won't let Arjuna off the hook by saying, do whatever you want. And then he's saying, no, I love you too much to just let you do whatever you want. I want you to just surrender. Let's do this together. The last thought, which is just a nuance of what we're discussing, is we see the picture of Gop Kumar when he meets Krishna after Krishna's coming back from herding the cows, and they embrace him. And Krishna's so happy, and Krishna's saying, I was waiting for you. And when I heard that story, I thought, we must understand it, we should understand it. It seems we should understand it. If Krishna's waiting for Gop Kumar, it means he's waiting for all of us. And then I added something to it, which if we make the Hollywood movie, we have license, dramatic license to add, where Krishna says, what took you so long? Which just embarrasses you to death, because you know what took you so long was those little chocolate bars you couldn't give up, and those movies you couldn't stop watching, and you know, you couldn't get up early in the morning, and those schnick schnick bombs, you know, at midnight, you know. That's what took you so long. You know, what are you going to tell Krishna? What took you so long? My stupidity, my foolishness, you know. But my desire to enjoy, to be you, to imitate you, to play God. But it's a nice meditation, even though Krishna wouldn't say that, to imagine when you finally go back to Godhead, Krishna says, what took you so long? I've been waiting here a long time for you. And sometimes when I chant my rounds, I think, this is the way I can make that time shorter if I chant them properly, and I can reduce the time that I stay away from Krishna and ensure that in this lifetime I can go back to Godhead. Then the last thing I'm going to say. This morning and yesterday morning I was reading some things Prabhupada was saying, and there are so many lectures in which Prabhupada is talking about this life is the last, finishing your business in this life, going back to Godhead, this is the opportunity. You can do it now, why take another life, etc. Just that theme. It's repeated so often. And you could see it in a number of ways. Number one, like, hello, stupid. Of course, Prabhupada wouldn't say it that way, but hello. Like, you can do it in this lifetime, so do it. Like, what's wrong? What's the problem? But you can also see it like Prabhupada saying, you could not only do it this lifetime, but Krishna, you've made Krishna wait for so many lifetimes. He actually wants you in Leela with him. And you've been making him wait for so many. Don't make him wait longer. You could take it that way also. Don't make him wait. He's waiting for you. All you have to do is reciprocate with the love he's giving you. That's all you have to do. That's all this Bhagavad Gita is teaching. You can take Bhakti Shastri 4 months, but this is it. One verse. I love you, love me back. That's it. There's your Bhakti Shastri. Pass the test right there. If you understand that, you've understood it. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go permanently. So is there any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah.
First of all, thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. So, that verse, Sardharman, Pritachyamam, Ekam Sharanam Raj. Sharanam versus Samarpan. That is in Sanskrit. So, shelter versus surrender. Krishna is saying, take my shelter. He is not saying, surrender to me. And what I understand, the difference between these two words.
What you said? He's not saying surrender to me.
Yeah, he's saying sharan, maam ekam sharanam raj. Sharanam means shelter, not surrender. And the two different meanings.
Prabhupada's translation of sharanam.
Okay. And because
sharanam means surrender, but what does it mean to take shelter? There's six ways you can surrender. So that's what Prabhupada means, those six items of surrender. That's how we can understand.
Uh-huh. Could you please explain what are those six items?
What's favorable, accept, what, reject what's not favorable. Krishna is always the protect, Krishna always protects you and maintain you. To humility and give yourself fully to Krishna. As I've also wondered why Prabhupada didn't say sharanam, because for us taking shelter, it sounds better than surrender. But then surrender according to Shastra means surrender basically means do what will please Krishna. And by doing that you have his shelter. And don't do what won't please him. And don't worry. He'll protect you. He'll maintain you. And and give yourself, body, mind, soul, give it without fear. Because you keep, and another way of looking at that word sharanam, as I say, it's love, because where there's love, there's surrender, there's shelter. That's a byproduct of love. You give to the person you love. Even though there's so many ways you can understand it. and you can get esoteric, which means Sharanam Braja, go to Braja. Go into Braja Lila.
So just my thought on it. Thank you. So the way I understood shelter versus surrender is, you know, shelter means somebody's fighting outside, he doesn't solve or he doesn't win, he comes to me and takes my shelter. And surrender means somebody is fighting against me and he can't win, and I tell him, drop your weapon, come to me, and that's surrender. So these
I'll
are two different.
I'll protect you.
Yeah.
I'll take care of you.
Yeah. So what he's shelter, what verse is saying is, take sharanam means we are all fighting outside somewhere, you know, against Maya or something, I don't know. And he's saying, drop everything, come to me, take my refuge, take my shelter.
Yeah, I'll protect
and,
you.
And surrender means you don't fight. I mean, it looks like we are fighting against Krishna and he doesn't want us to fight against him.
Well, the problem is it's an English word, so, you know, it's a translation. So if we get too into semantics with translation, it doesn't work. You know, sharanam, as a Sanskrit word of shelter, it's easier, like what you said first, works better. But to understand Prabhupada, why he's using the word surrender, because he's using it all through the Gita, surrender to Krishna means just give up your attempt to be God. That's the way Prabhupada uses it, give up your identification with the body, that things belong to you. You know, it's a whole, surrender can be a whole slew of things. So you have to, if you go through the Gita and see how Prabhupada uses the word surrender, it would also help better understand. You know, I think that's important because it's an English word and we have a meaning that we ascribe to it. But then we need to go and say, well, how did Prabhupada use that word? And then you get a better understanding. Well, he used it like 7,000 times. So how did he use it? What's the context? And I think you would find that your definition of shelter is often how we use it. Because if you surrender to Krishna, you have a shelter. Right? That's what it would mean. Krishna, I surrender to you. You're saying surrender means, oh, he was an adversary, like, hands up, I surrender. In a sense, we are adversaries. We're imitation gods. But that's not how Krishna means it. Like Krishna doesn't have to, he's not worried about us conquering him. Right? At least that's my understanding. But I think it would be good for you to study how Prabhupada uses the word. And it would expand the understanding.
I was in New Talba, which Prabhupada was there.
Oh,
and Prabhupada simplified it real nice. He said, he was brought out of the standing here, he was out of the Vyasa, I was sitting there watching, and he said, chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regular principles, and I'm not flattering you, you'll go home this way.
But he won't. How many times did he say that? Yeah. It's kind of unprecedented in Gaudiya Vaishnava history. Make it that easy. But like in Bollywood, you know, your parents are in the movie industry, and you're going to be you've got an easy time being a Bollywood star, right? Not what you know, but who you know. So, same applies here. You go back to Godhead, they're looking at you and they're thinking, they're looking at you, like, what are you doing here? I'm with Bhaktivedanta Swami. Oh, okay. Right over here, come right in. 16 rounds, four principles with Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada. Oh, okay. We got a place for you. But you can expand that idea that if I can serve such an exalted person as Srila Prabhupada, then what credits do I get by doing that? You know, we do service and it goes so austere and so much in anxiety and so much responsibility. No, you shouldn't think like that. You should think, what a fortune I have to serve Prabhupada. Whatever anxiety I get is nothing compared to the opportunity. What opportunity that is for people like ourselves who have no real qualification, and we can do so much intimate service. Prabhupada gave us this whole movement. He said, go out and make people devotees. I was just talking to a devotee in Australia. They just started a program. And she said, well, we just made 3 Australians. In that city, it was probably the first 3 Australians they made in like 10 years or something. They're not making local people. And she's just a young devotee. And I was thinking, you know, what great mercy she gets for doing that service. So we should always feel what an honor to have any service, even if it's big and responsible and filled with anxiety. And you know, you can't avoid anxiety anyway, so might as well have anxiety for Krishna. At least that anxiety is blissful. That anxiety, Krishna, when Gop Kumar came, you know what Krishna said? So beautiful, Krishna said, I know all the sacrifices you made for me. So all those cold mornings you came to Mangal Artik, and those people who were screaming at you on book distribution, and those hard to deal with devotees that kept you up late at night because you couldn't resolve a problem with them, etc. Krishna knows all that. And you go back and meet him. He said, yeah, I know you suffered so much in my service. Thank you. What an honor, isn't it? I mean, to suffer for our own sense gratification, that's not really a great honor. Even animals are doing that. Right? Anything else? Certainly Janaki has a place. You have? Oh, no. Okay. Evan has it.
Hi, this is Ruth. Thank you for class. You mentioned briefly a pastime with Krishna and someone, Kumara?
Gopakumar.
I'm not familiar with the pastime. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more about the pastime.
It's in a book called Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's the story of how he goes back to Godhead. It's a long, long story. I think there's 2 stories. Make a long story short, he goes throughout the universe trying to find his place, and he's a cowherd boy. So until he arrives in Braj, and as a coward boy, he's not satisfied. So he's on going to heavenly planets, and well, this is not right. And then he arrives in Vaikuntha, and he's going up to Vishnu. I go, hey, Vishnu, what's going on? What's going down, Vishnu? And everybody's like, you can't do that. He's Vishnu. You can't treat him that. So he was like out of place everywhere, trying to find his place. And then he finally ends up in Raj, and then when he gets there, Krishna's just coming home from herding the cows, and then people point, and Krishna's there, and they run, they approach one another. I think they ran, and they embrace, and there's a little conversation. So that conversation is interesting because it, you know, our West Judeo-Christian view of God is this old man with a beard sitting on a throne. And even though we know that's not Krishna, that stuff has got in there before we became devotees. And, you know, maybe your parents punished you too much, or you think, you know, and then add to it, like, I'm a rascal and sinful, and why would Krishna want to do anything but smash me in the head with a hammer for all my sins? So when you see that conversation, you see what's in Krishna's heart. I've been waiting for you. I remember all the austerities you've gone through. And so we should always remember that when we talk about loving Krishna, he's already loving us. Because I think sometimes we think, well, will he love us until I love him? No, he's always loving us. And I think a lot of us think, okay, he's just going to reciprocate with the love that I have. It's true in one sense, but in terms of the relationship, it's already perfect from his side. And yes, he will reciprocate. But when we have pure love, then he can fully manifest. Fully manifest unlimitedly that love. But that love is there, always. So that's why he expresses it to Gokumar. Where have you been? I've been waiting for you. I know what you've gone through. And then my little, what took you so long? Which actually might be there in the commentaries of the Acharyas that Krishna was, you know, feeling separation and waiting. I've been waiting. Yeah. So what took you so long would be something we might say. But if Krishna said that, he would mean, I've been waiting for you, I've been missing you. But I like to think of that, Krishna thinking, what took you so long? Because then, now, right now, we can think Krishna's waiting. And what, you know, another question Krishna could ask. What was so important that kept you down there for so long? And what's your answer? Well, they have good pizza and ice cream down there. You know? Yeah. Oh, I really like to play golf. You know, it was hard to go back. Just the Titanic, I've watched that 400 times. I don't know. If I go to the spiritual world, if they don't show the Titanic, what will I do? So it's kind of funny, you know. It's like, you know, I don't really like authority, you know. When I heard in the spiritual world, you know, I'll be in a camp and there's hierarchy and, like, you know, there's all these material ideas. You know, so like, what's actually keeping you down here? You know, nothing really. So if Krishna's going to ask you that question, like, what are you waiting for? What's keeping you here? What are you going to say? Pizza, ice cream, the Titanic. Well, I just saved up for a new guitar. I'm waiting for this for 10 years. So, okay, stick around. You know. Maybe you'll become a tree in your next life. You can be a guitar. So, you know. So it's nice, you know, to look at things that way. And I sometimes chant to that picture, and I think, well, that's the main actor, Gop Kumar. I'd like to be in one of those movies that's the main actor also. Yeah. Well, if you don't think you're in Sakya Ras, then you want to be in that picture over there. The one I titled, Don't Try This at Home picture. But you could be a gopi, just don't try to be Krishna. You could be a gopi in that picture. So, as Prabhupada said, as we just heard, you will see Krishna, you will dance with Krishna. Krishna's waiting for all of us. So, Krishna's waiting to dance with you. That's pretty good. What do you think? You want to join? Well, I don't know, Prabhu, you know. I always wanted to. That's our foolishness. Krishna's willing to dance with us. And Mahaprabhu dancing at Srivastava, that was Rasleela. So, you know, Harinam Sankirtan, in a sense, is Rasleela. Prabhupada said Sankirtan is bringing people to Krishna, and that's what Radharani does. It's in the mood of Gopi Bhav. You know, it's like, it gets pretty esoteric. And we're all entering into that, which is amazing that we've been allowed to enter into that. So it's always nice to remember what's going on and what fortune we have. And that helps us become strong and determined to finish our business as prophets in this life. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kai Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna.